Hello, Degrassi alumni. We're back. It's another episode of the Degrads podcast featuring yours truly, Shane Kippel, Gavin Spinner-Mason, and
myself, Mike Lobel, but you might know me better as Jay Hogart. Today we've got a new fresh episode for you. We watched episode 112, Wannabe. This is an episode about friendship. It's about jealousy and loyalty and just how far we can push our closest friends before we break them.
See, I thought that the episode was about popularity, jealousy, friendship, backstabbing, and always double-checking your lottery numbers before you go up to the counter.
Good point. That last one there.
So this episode came out on February 3rd, 2002. The writers were Aaron Martin and Jan Moore that did the story, and the teleplay was by Susie Nielsen, director Lori Lind. Now, in the time capsule, the Billboard Top 100, as I said, there would not be too much of a change, it seems, over the next couple weeks, looking back. Usher still topping the charts. You Got It Bad. No Doubt. Hey Baby at number two. And personal favorite, Linkin Park, In the End at number three. In the box office, you have A Beautiful Mind, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship, and Black Hawk Down taking the top three spots. And the top show on February 3rd, 2002, by ratings, was Super Bowl 36.
Not
between
us.
Between the Patriots and the Rams. 40 million people in the U.S. watch.
It's hard to beat that, man. It's hard to beat that. So here's the thing, folks. A few fans have written to us in the past and suggested that we break down the episode titles because, as you might know, Degrassi has named their episodes after popular songs. This is no exception. So we're going to start doing that. This song, Wannabe, was written. Does it need an introduction? Obviously, nobody...
Is it going to tell the world about this song? Yeah.
Okay. Wannabe, the smash hit female empowerment song of the 90s. It was released in 1996. And yeah, to this very day, nobody will tell us what Zigga Zig Ah means. So the song and the episode are both about sticking by your friends and supporting one another, especially when something or someone new comes along,
especially if you want to be my lover.
Exactly. I think the song is like, you know, it's about a new lover. You got to sort of pass the friend test. In this case, it's a little bit more, well, we'll get to it, but in this case, it's about a new friend group.
Yeah. And and I have lots of questions about if Paige actually has any friends that are truly her friends, because it seems like they're all just cards to play at a certain period of time, or maybe Hazel stole a boyfriend and there's something deep seated in there that Paige is just waiting for.
Paige does Hazel. She does Hazel
very
so dirty.
Oh yeah. Very dirty. Okay. Without further ado, we get into episode 112, Wannabe, in parentheses, Friends Forever.
That's a number four.
Yeah. Okay, so we open on Paige, Hazel, and Oscar doing an interview with Liberty promoting the Spirit Squad. What's the Spirit Squad? That is hopefully Degrassi's cheerleading team. But they need a certain number of people to sign up or else the team will not come to fruition. Manny appears. She expresses her interest in signing up. And to seal the deal with Paige, she does a series of fantastic cartwheels. And then she's a shoo-in.
I had no idea she was a gymnast.
Yes. Well, I mean, she did those splits later on too, and she has the smile pasted to her face too, which
that is the true sign of a gymnast. Yeah.
Yes, or a dancer in general. You have to have this big manic smile on your face the whole time.
It's to paste it over for the pain.
Dead eyes, but big smile.
Dead eyes, huge grin.
Yeah. Like Tom Cruise's famous interview when he was talking about being in love. Anyway, now we roll the credits, whatever it takes, and so on. Now, Emma reacts to Paige's announcement about cheerleading and lets us, the audience, and Manny know her thoughts about Degrassi having a spirit squad. She thinks it's outdated. She thinks it's sexist. She thinks it's a backwards movement for feminism, or it's anti-feminist at its core. Manny, who has already signed up for the spirit squad and obviously feels differently, carefully offers the opposite viewpoints and has to squirm around telling Emma that she already signed up. She doesn't actually tell her she already signed up, but Emma is asking her if she's planning to, and she quickly changes the subject.
I think the new hot take is that cheerleading is awesome, and it is a sport, and it's back, and I would never disparage it now. I think you would get backlash for disparaging it.
Yeah, and some of what those cheerleaders can do in those competitive squads is insane.
It's amazing. There's a docuseries. I can't remember what it's called. There's a docuseries about it. It's freaking
I remember.
Awesome.
Yeah. Following like some of the biggest competitive squads in their training, right? Yeah, I can't
it's
remember.
It's fascinating, and it's obviously so dangerous and difficult. And
yeah.
You've got to be in such peak performance to do that.
People get hurt a lot. Just like anything with gymnastics, it's just a torque in the wrong direction, and that might be it for you for good. So, yeah,
very true.
Props to you, cheerleaders. Don't let anyone disparage. Okay,
we're cheering for you.
Yeah. They don't need it. Okay. So here we're with T-O-B. What? Sorry, Toby and JT. Now, they are mashing full containers, mini containers of Pringles down their gullets, and much to the chagrin of Radich, we do not know why. That's a lot of salt. Pringles
the
are
scene
delicious.
Is hilarious. The scene is hilarious. Also, okay, they start on a close-up of one of the Pringles cans, and it's turned around. And every actor kind of knows what it means when somebody on set says, hey, can you just turn the product around so we don't see the logo? It means they don't have the clearance rights for it. They haven't paid enough money for it. And then the camera pulls back and we see the Pringles logo is revealed. And then in the next scene, we're seeing a sea of Pringles cans. And I thought, great, we've gone from pizza, which is the most overrated, just my opinion, pizza in Ontario, to Pringles, which I don't know, is Pringles a chip? Or is it a different thing? Are we going to get canned for this? I don't know.
I mean, Pringles is a chip as much as McDonald's fries are real French fries, you know, because those are mashed potatoes injected into they're delicious. Pringles are powdered potato pressed into that form. But that crunch,
you knew so much about this.
To me, says chip. Oh, wait. Yeah, well. I mean, I was a big kid, right? I knew my chips. Anyway, so they're mashing all of these chips into their face like they're, you know, they just got back from war and they hadn't eaten a proper meal in quite some time. And we find out when we see what looks like two dozen empty cans set up, that they're looking for the ace of clubs on the bottom of the empty can, much like the golden ticket for Willy Wonka. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, if anyone here plays, you know, McDonald's Monopoly, is if you get the ace of clubs and the ace of spades, you win $1 million. Who has it? It's Liberty. Liberty has the ace of clubs. And I mean, personally, the reaction that Toby and JT had, if you were looking for that one other one and you found it and that's $1 million for you, there's no containing that excitement. I thought that was kind of, they missed the mark a little bit.
Toby's little smile about, and he puts a hand over the top of the Pringles.
It was more about covering it, you know, making sure Liberty didn't try to, you know, insert herself into this whole thing, and less about the fact that, oh my God, we're going to be rich. But alas, Liberty is now part of the mix because without her ace of clubs, there would be no money. So now they to bring her in.
She negotiates.
Yeah, and she's a hard negotiator. We know that. Okay. Emma and Manny, they bump into Paige and Hazel, also in the cafeteria, who want to see Manny's cartwheel again. And Manny, standing next to Emma, is visibly uncomfortable, and she knows that Emma is judging this whole thing. She doesn't like Paige, she doesn't like the Spirit Squad, but still Manny tries to impress Paige, goes back and does another public cartwheel for the whole cafeteria to see. Sits very well with Paige and Hazel, not so much with Emma, leading to bathroom conversation number one of the episode. Now, in the bathroom, Emma is giving her opinions on...
She's making fun of Paige.
Yeah.
She's impersonating
her. She's making fun
her.
of the archetype of the cheerleader, right?
That's right. Which is kind of tacky by today's standards. She's using the word... Okay, so here's another thing that I noticed. She's putting in the word like in there, you know, the filler word, like, oh my God, like this and that, right? So like talking like she thinks a cheerleader, the archetype of a cheerleader. As
yeah, the ditzy, like valley girl kind of, yeah, of course.
And I think this was like, this was, you know, standard fare. It was easy to make fun of this kind of a caricature in the early 2000s, the 90s and 2000s. Also think like, the filler word like, when did that come into parlance? When did people start saying that? I don't know, but I feel like it might have been the 90s. So not,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, 90s sounds about right. But it also didn't seem in character for Emma. Emma seems to be like the noble, rise above kind of girl. She'll fight for what she believes in, but she doesn't seem to be the one to kind of get really personal and attack people's character like that. So right,
especially
off the bat,
other women for their choices.
Yeah.
This is a bad take, Emma.
Yeah, yeah. And you could tell, or at least I had an inkling that there was some jealousy involved in this. This was not just about the kind of person Paige was. It was, you know, trying to make sure she knows that Paige is the cool girl, and Emma might be a little threatened by that. With everything that Paige isn't, there's a lot that Paige is that Emma probably secretly may want. Anyway.
Totally, and is afraid. What if she becomes friends with Paige? Then who am I?
Exactly. So now, what do you do? Character assassination.
That's right.
We've all been there before. It's perfectly natural. And the younger you are, the more, you know, obvious of a choice that is to do. Okay, so Emma does not hold back in telling Manny exactly what she thinks of the type of girl that cheerleads, of the types of girls that Paige and Hazel are, and just her thoughts on cheerleading in general. And it's a tense moment when Manny tries to figure out if Emma is actually going to go forward and write an article, you know, a defamatory article of the Spirit Squad for the Grapevine. But what I really do like about this is Manny, we've talked about this in so many episodes. Up until now, she's just been the ultimate supportive best friend, but she's still as mild-mannered and soft-spoken as she is, she still has a backbone. She doesn't get pushed around. She yeah. feels the way that she feels, and she won't be swayed. She's the strong, silent type in many ways. Not completely.
Yeah, we really see her character come out in this.
Yeah, because standing up to Emma as a best friend, who's so opinionated and very brazen when it comes to her tactics, and we haven't seen Manny have to stand up to Emma yet. Yeah, she's not backing down. I was very impressed. I was on the edge of my seat. Okay, then JT and Toby are trying to negotiate a fair split of the $1 million with Liberty. They land on 50% each. So 25, 25, JT, Toby, 50% for Liberty.
That's a really good deal for Liberty. Holy yeah. smokes.
Well, I mean, it's hers. She's the other piece, right?
I mean, they could split it three ways evenly, but all right.
Spinner, who we did see lurking in the background and trying to figure out what they were doing with all the empty cans in the cafeteria as he was there serving food. Should have been paying attention to one thing, paid attention to something else. Doesn't matter. Minor detail. Spinner through the bookshelves lets them all know that he is going to racketeer his way into 10% of the prize money.
Dude, you should have started at 25.
I know that seemed like a very, but once again, Spinner, not the best of it, but, yeah, 10% was a very low start. And if he's
starting offer 10%,
and if it's under threat of, you know, severe physical harm, You could start at 50%. You could start at 75%.
Totally. It's just funny.
Yeah. Him being a big, scary eighth grader, they all bend the knee immediately to this, which I found hilarious. And in the next scene, Spinner even says, yeah, I'm going to hold on to this for protection until it's time to cash in both containers. So Spinner is really finding his way. He's a life of crime. A life of crime
starting.
Seems to be what. Yeah. Okay. Manny finds Paige and Hazel in the hallway and lets them know that Emma might write this defamatory grapevine article. And their answer to this, girl, let's hang out for a little bit. And then they go over to Manny's and they talk about boys and they try on outfits and then start talking about Emma and her opinion on cheerleading when the phone rings and it is Emma. Paige wants Manny to verify once again that Emma is not going to write that article, but when Emma hears Paige's voice in the background and realizes that Manny blew her off to hang out with the mean girls, Emma is not too pleased, ooh, to boy. Say the least, and she hangs up on Manny.
Yep.
Ooh, jealousy.
The first rift.
But I mean, I would do that. No one wants to be blown off for anybody, especially not for a person that you
don't like,
do not like, and yeah. that you might be jealous of yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. It's weird to see Emma in this position too. She's usually the one holding the card. She usually has the power. You feel here it's like slipping away from her and she's desperately trying to keep it.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Again, I'm so shocked by, I thought Emma had a little bit more self-confidence than this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To deal with this in a not like flippant and overreactive way, but hey.
But it's proof that, you know, in status quo, You think you're top dog, you think you're really centered, and then something comes in and shakes it up. Sometimes your strength comes from the people around you without you even realizing, as we found out later with Paige as well, because I can't wait to get to that moment, the standoff between Manny and Paige later on.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Paige thinks that she's top dog, and then Manny came in and made her back down. You're only as strong as the situation allows for. I don't know, but I was surprised by Emma's, you know, pettiness in this episode too. I didn't see it coming. I kind of like it, though. It takes away from her character currency a little bit.
Well, but it also, like, shows that she's human, because she can't be on a pedestal the whole time, right? She's going to go through real stuff. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now we're in JT's disgustingly dirty room, and he's desperately rummaging through his clothes and drawers. What's he looking for? I think we all know. He lost the Ace of Spades, or at least misplaced it. Oh, man.
Classic JT.
This is not going to be good. Classic JT. But could you imagine?
I am imagining because this, you mentioned McDonald's Monopoly. Every single year when McDonald's Monopoly comes back around, I inevitably have exactly this same episode play out, and I lose something, and I'm certain that that thing was the winning ticket. Every single bloody year. This episode has happened to me over and over again.
So JT has lost the Ace of Spades. Now what is he going to do? Did he just lose out on his one chance for a taste of the good life? Now we're at the Spirit Squad practice. There's some tension as Paige seems to be pinning Manny against Hazel for some sadistic reason.
She's just playing God here. She's like,
pinning
her cheerleaders together.
That's okay, Hazel. That was all right, but I'm sure Manny could do it better. Do it, Manny. You're going to be a star, you know, right below my name, of course.
It's like Lord of the Flies in here.
Yep. Yep. And a nice little Mrs. Bates, Emma watching through the window, stalking and glowering from behind the glass.
And this is the first of two shots like this in the entire episode. Repeat this motif, if you will.
Yes.
It's a dolly zoom into a creeping Emma from behind the glass.
Mrs. Bates, mother, I see you.
Totally.
But yeah, she's very angry. I mean, Emma is a little vindictive in this episode as well. Like you said, she is showing her humanity. She is not.
She's not perfect.
She was angry about what happened the day before, and this results in her writing that article for the Grapevine and submitting it to Liberty, who gives her warning that this might not go over well with Manny. As you know, she signed up. But after Emma essentially says, push it through, the focus becomes on on Liberty's shiny new red leather cowgirl boots.
The costumes in this episode, the wardrobe, awesome. Do we know? I love the detail of the cowboy boots because it has nothing to do with the plot at all.
Well, it does. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. It has.
Explain.
We have no idea why Liberty herself would have chosen to, if she came into a lot of money, get cowboy boots. Is that something she always fantasized about? Is that secretly what she's into? No. But why it does forward the plot is the Liberty and, as we'll see, Toby are, they think they're already rich. So they're making their, they're giving stuff away and they're going to, this is liberty. She probably spent like $200, $300 on those boots.
Yeah, they were expensive.
She's like, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, good point. Exactly. I missed that. I was like, oh, this isn't just a fun little thing.
No, no, they're spending the money that they don't have yet.
I totally missed that. And then the other wardrobe thing is Emma. And I hate to beat up on this girl so much this episode, but what is up with Emma's chunky green sweater? It is threatening to swallow her head. It's like every scene, it's like bigger and bigger. And it's just, it's like up to here.
It's just keeps adding water and it keeps growing on her.
Yeah. It's like one of those dinosaurs you grow in water.
Is it mohair? Is that like the same sweater that Kramer was wearing?
I don't know. It looks just like scratchy wool, but it's getting bigger and bigger and threatening to swallow her.
It what looks like is nice about it is if you found yourself on a plane in that sweater, it has a built-in neck pillow. So
there you go.
All right. Cowboy boots take us to a confrontation time. Paige, Hazel, and Manny run into Emma. Manny is now walking with Paige and Hazel. She switched sides over here. And Emma proudly shows them the article that she just had published. Paige and Emma exchange some blows back and forth. Read a few excerpts. Paige critiques. Manny is very hurt and upset by Emma grouping her into the class of bimbo that she seems to be generalizing all cheerleaders with, and crumples up the article, drops it. I think she should have thrown it at Emma, but she just dropped it and runs off. Emma, maybe a tad remorseful in this moment, follows to
the bathroom.
Bathroom conversation number two. Bathroom fight.
This is the scene of the episode. I mean, this is all the juice is in this one moment here.
So let's squeeze it. Emma is angry that Manny is considering Paige a friend and tries to character assassinate, convince Manny that Paige is just using her. Manny chalks this all up to jealousy from Emma as the cool grade eights are choosing her. She's getting the nod. She's getting the tap and Emma just can't take it. And that final, you know, some hurtful things were,
oh, you mean my favorite new line of the season? You're so boring, sometimes I want to scream.
Want to scream.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is also a funny line. I don't buy it when it came out. I mean, you know, Cassie did what she could to sell that, but it's just it's so dorky.
Yeah.
And it's a little clunky. You're so boring, sometimes I want to scream. But she owned it. She committed. But it was funny. I laughed a little uncomfortably because it was also very rude, very upsetting.
It was very rude. And, but I think Emma was more hurt by the Paige's fun part because I think Emma realized in that moment, and it seems to be true when you look back at it, that for everything Emma is, fun and easygoing are not those things.
Yeah.
Yes.
She is not so much fun or easygoing.
No. And I mean, that comes with the territory. If you're going to take up the mantle and be an activist, a lot of the time fun is not going to be in your vernacular.
Just lighten up a little bit. Emma also refers to Paige as a pretentious wannabe. Boom, the title of the episode and the song in the dialogue. That's pretty fun.
That's right. But it's funny. She's calling Paige the wannabe, but isn't it really that Manny is the one who's sort of being accused of being the wannabe here?
I'll go wannabe? I'll go one deeper. Isn't it really Emma who might just be projecting her insecurities of not being cool enough or interesting enough or enough to be Manny's friend? That's right. I went to therapy.
You want to talk about it?
Later.
Maybe on the next episode. We'll just do an entire
next Patreon
episode. Yeah, next. Hit us up on Patreon, where I will go through my entire last 10 years of therapy.
Okay. We are back with JT, who walks in on Toby giving away his Sega Game Gear. Because apparently it was that was so, I mean, Game Boy was great, but the Game Gear in color,
holy,
come on.
Oh my God.
Come on.
Evolution of the.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Anyway, so Toby's giving away his Game Gear to a fellow student because it's cheap and he has plans on upgrading all of his electronics with the prize money. To
he's
which
gonna get a
JT,
PlayStation 1.
Yeah, that's right. Crash Bandicoot. So JT has to tell Toby to slow his roll and then eventually has to fess up that he lost the other piece.
And Toby goes absolutely ape on JT. Like, he loses
understandable.
His G-darn mind completely in the best way.
I would tackle him through the wall.
I love Goldsby in this mode. He's a wrecking ball. I want more of this. I hope we get more of this.
Well, we got what we were hoping for with Manny. Maybe Toby will prove himself to us as well.
Yeah.
All right. And to button up that scene, we have Batman enter. Mr. Simpson entering late and anxiety laden as always, and who introduces today's lesson.
Photoshop.
Right before Manny takes a very uncomfortable and somewhat unwelcome seat next to Emma. That is weird to not say. That was actually a really beautiful shot. Just the Emma in the foreground and the focus pull, but it was done very well. It hurt my heart that Emma and Manny are at ends with each other.
They're the best together. I'm so upset.
I know. In the next scene.
Are you going to talk about the cowboy boots in this shot, the establishing shot of the hallway?
No, I didn't see cowboy boots.
Did you notice that? It was a little Easter egg. So the class, I guess it's in between periods. The bell rings and everybody comes out into the hallways. And in the sort of chaos, you see just a pair of those red cowboy boots go right past the screen. It was Liberty. Or it could have been an AD with her cowboy boots on pretending to be her because you couldn't see her.
I'm wondering what this could be. Is this like the fedora thing or like Bruce McDonald's cowboy hat? We're establishing red cowboy boots in this.
It's a thing. Yeah. It's a thing. It's a motif. It's a motif now.
But I had to draw attention to Radich announcing that the Grapevine edition has been released and is available for pickup, and the featured lunch item is Mongolian chicken stir fry.
That's right.
I don't know
who's dishing that up in a hairnet.
Good call. I just I don't think in all my years in school would the principal or anyone announce what was on the menu in the cafeteria that day.
Yeah.
But sure.
I thought it was cute. Like, I thought it was fun. Like, I kind of wished schools did that. It would be more pleasant. Also, Mongolian. What was it? Mongolian chicken?
Mongolian chicken stir fry.
Man.
Yeah.
Mongolia is top of my bucket list of countries to go to. So.
Yeah. You're going to forage across the Gobi Desert and see if you can.
Yeah, survive. Man. I want to see those girls who fly those hawks, those eagles. It is my wish.
Nothing but the best on your trip to Central Asia.
Thank you.
Okay, so Manny sees Paige and Hazel taking all the copies of The Grapevine off the rack and suspiciously, secretively walk into the gym. She follows. And the girls are ripping Emma's article out of the Grapevine edition. And I understood the reason. Paige says that this is bad press and it could stop people from signing up. And we only have eight
members so far. If we don't get 12, there will be no Spirit Squad. But as true as the motivation may have been, then she, this is kind of like, you know, the initiation in into the mob, where like, okay, now you want to be one of us, take the shot.
And there's a few of these mob like moments in this episode.
Yeah,
Spinner coming out and basically extorting them through because of threat of violence that he himself is going to perpetrate. There's that.
Yep.
Also, Spinner is about to come back as Liberty's muscle.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I know.
Very mob like high school happening now.
It's true. But yes, yeah, so Paige now tests Manny's commitment to the cause, and also makes her complicit, and gets her to tear one article out of one edition. And Manny is quite conflicted about doing that, yet she goes ahead with
Except
it.
In the mob, it's like you have to shoot a guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
She's getting off light.
Yeah, well, it's a warm-up. Paige, you know, it's a nudge. You can't go right to the murder. You have to start with the vandalism. Okay. JT and Toby are trying to figure out where the can is, but Liberty has run out of patience, and she turned to Spinner, as you said, the henchman, to turn the heat up on JT. But as he threatens JT with stuffing him into his own locker, JT remembers that he did not check his locker. And now we're at the locker, which is a hoarder's nightmare. That locker. Yeah. That is
just like his room.
Like Yeah. But it just seems like it's a trash compactor. I didn't know he could. Anyway. Did people actually keep lockers like that?
I did.
Did you?
My locker, guys, I have nightmares about it still. I'm closing my eyes. I can see it right now. It was just a rat's nest.
My locker was nice and organized. It wasn't decorated. It was very bare bones, but it was nice and organized. Yeah, Now I wish I had some of those organizational skills as I look around my place over here. But, you know.
It switched.
Moving on. So JT clears out his disgusting locker, and he finds the can, which he promptly turns over to Spinner. He's the one to realize that these are both aces of clubs. There is no prize. And Spinner, who I thought would have turned around and stuffed JT in the locker for this or gone on a rampage, actually just gives him a little nudge, but it's Liberty and Toby that shove JT into the locker, and rightly so. I mean, check your work, you know? It's like, I got Boardwalk and Park Place, and then you realize it's just two Park Places. Come on, man.
Dude,
it's an amateur mistake.
Actually done that. That's me. Every year, I'm telling you.
Do you remember that lottery ticket, Instant Millions? Do you remember that one? It was a scratch ticket?
No.
Anyway, when I was a kid, it was a, you know, you're scratching this area of play, and if you get three of the matching numbers, you win that prize, the prize of the value of those numbers. And I scratched two 100,000s, and then I scratched a 10,000 and thought that it was 100,000, and I ran to my parents and told them that we won. And made quite a fool of myself. So I've been JT in this situation.
Feel it.
But I only hurt myself. He hurt the team. You know what I mean?
True.
Okay. So Paige is now overseeing Oscar's designs of the cheerleader outfits. And Simpson and Emma enter to question about the vandalized grapevine editions. And Paige, as you know, strong a woman as she is, denies. She is very Machiavellian. Whatever she has to do, she just, no, wasn't me. Manny is actually about to stand up and take credit for this. Do the right thing. But Paige jumps in and just blames it all on Hazel. Once again, I'm wondering if, because I actually can't remember, if there's something, if this is a situation of keeping your enemies closer, that Paige and Hazel are actually not friends, or if this is just what Paige does, that anybody is expendable, depending on the what the situation calls for.
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think it's just kind of, it's quick thinking. Who can I blame? Oh, the person who isn't currently here right now.
That's terrible.
Yep.
That's terrible. Sorry,
Hazel. Can't corroborate this.
But now we're starting to see that Manny realizes that Paige does just use people. And yeah, if that's what she's doing to Hazel, what does that mean for her? So
yeah,
Manny is left to question what kind of friend Paige really is. And when she confronts Paige about this, who just tries to breeze it over, she killed her friend. And then she's essentially asking, like, okay, what are we eating for lunch right now? Just on to a different topic. Manny asks Paige what kind of person would do that and why would she do that to Hazel specifically. It results in Paige saying, you know what, you did it too, and even though you just did one, they're gonna hear that you did all of them. But Manny stands up to the queen bee in school. Mm-hmm. She calls Paige's bluff. She's like, yeah, what do you think Simpson is going to think about this? I don't know. Let's go ask him. And that Paige was just expecting that to be the ender of the argument. But Manny walks away. Paige is now on the defensive. That was such a beautiful moment.
Man, when Cassie, when she confronts Paige, she switches gears. She goes to another level, and you can see her grow up, because she's been very, very sort of timid and sweet and nice and reserved and just there to help and everybody get along. But now she is full defensive, and she becomes like bigger than Paige. She becomes older than Paige. She becomes cooler than Paige. She becomes more confident than Paige. It's kind of amazing to see her go from 0 to 100 in a couple seconds. It was quite a transformation on screen.
Yeah. And then she tells Paige exactly what she thinks of her as a person. And she, Emma is in the background overseeing this whole thing with a smile on her face this time, or at least a grin. And just watching Paige be taken down a few pegs and be very aware that this is happening in public in the middle of the hallway, that her reputation is going to take a hit from that. Everyone saw a grade 7 just hand her ass to her.
That's a big deal. I mean, I remember the gap between grade 7 and grade 8 is so monumental when you're in school. It's like you can't bridge that gap. It's impossible.
And especially for someone like Paige, for any grade 7 to walk all over a grade 8 would be, you know, cause for entertainment anyway, and many rumors getting around. But the fact that it's Paige of all people, and then this for the most part, you know, like I don't know if Manny is popular, if anyone actually knows her. So essentially in school, a nobody just decimated the coolest girl in school who's also older. Yeah
It was cool.
Good for you Manny. Yeah,
you killed it, Cassie. You killed that moment.
All right.
Just in case she's listening.
Yeah. Cassie, you're so cool. You know what would make you so much more cool? If you came here and talked about your experience on Degrassi and playing Manny yourself. Just saying. So this takes us to our final scene. Emma apologizes for how she has been. And Manny, it was a really vulnerable, just open, honest moment of Manny's. She just said, look, I just wanted to have fun. And then Paige took an interest in me, which obviously felt good. And then it just became really complicated. And Manny said she's willing to walk away from the squad because how can she come back from this? Emma doesn't think she'll have to because Paige is, what did she say? She's mean, but she's not dumb. Essentially, Emma said, listen, you guys had a fight, but Paige knows your value. So I don't think you have anything to worry about with your position on the team. And as they bond over Manny's words to Paige and the friendship is back intact, we freeze. Good episode.
It was good. I will say this, though. There's a few things about the episode that bug me. And mainly it's with respect to the cheerleading thing, how Emma is so... I understand she was misguided, but Emma's apology was missing something. She apologizes saying it was wrong that I said this and I should have let you just do what you want to do as my friend because I care about you. But she never actually acknowledges why it was wrong to disparage the cheerleading team in the first place. And I felt like that was missing.
It was a ball that was tossed up in the air.
Well, like, and she could have said
it was never.
Yeah,
resolved.
She could totally. She could have said something to do with like cheerleading. Listen, if that's what you want to do, like, who am I to judge you for it? Who am I to judge any of the cheerleaders for it?
Yeah.
But she did.
Fair enough.
So that was kind of missing for me.
That's a good point because what fueled her rampage right from the beginning was about, how she saw it as backwards for the feminist movement and just the kind of girls that are attracted to cheerleading. It wasn't about Manny and her choices at that point. And it's true. It's a good point. It became more about Emma supporting Manny in the things that she wanted to do, but also not giving any explanation to overgeneralizing the kind of people. Yeah, good point, Mike. Good point. Any other qualms with the episode?
No, but I'm taking it to task because, like, listen, we love most of the stuff that we're seeing on the show. And I got to just point it out. I got to call it out as I see it. And I might be wrong, but that's just how I feel.
Considering last episode, as I... talked about then, where there was equal share of the A plot and B plot, and punch for punch, literally scene for scene, and it started on the A and it ended on the B. This B plot felt like a distant B plot, and
very small,
very small, just fun, and no tie into the A plot or common thread between the two.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice and breezy B plot.
Yeah,
A plot was
a little refreshing B plot for sure.
Yeah. But Hazel finally had a little bit more to say in this episode. Poor girl. Paige, Lauren was amazing as always. And Oscar came to the party and
new characters.
Yeah, new characters or just seeing a little bit more about characters that were minorly established before. Mm-hmm. But there's no question that this was Manny's coming out party. Yeah.
Here, let's celebrate that. All right, folks. Well, you know what time it is. We are avid readers of your questions, your comments in our email mailbag and also on our Discord. If you haven't signed up yet, please sign up to our Discord, DGrads Alumni. And we encourage you guys all to jump on there. There's some great conversations being had. We are peeking as Emma is from behind the glass all the time. And I've got a few questions here from Discord that I wanted to share with you, Shane, if I may. Ashley Sucks says, I absolutely adore the music in Degrassi, especially after season 6. Shout out to Alexis on Fire and Taking Back Sunday. If you could have chosen any band or artist to be on the show, who would you have picked?
Incubus.
Oh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll take your Incubus and I'll raise you a Deftones.
I was gonna... Okay. I'll take your Deftones and raise you a System of the Down.
I'll take your System of a Down, and I'll say Celine Dion.
I'll take your Celine Dion and run with it, because that is...
Yeah, great. I mean, you can't top that.
No.
Thanks for that
I was going to say Cher or... yeah.
You got to go like really obscure, like Woody Guthrie or something on that one.
Yeah.
thanks for that, Ashley Sucks. You don't suck, you rock. Mew 422 says, dude, Mike sounded like he had a good story about the commercial and Edward Norton, and then he just bailed. Can we hear that story on the next episode? I got to make it really short and sweet, but this one's funny. Rarely ever do you, as an actor, do you get to work with incredible directors. I worked with this director, Tony Kaye. He was the guy who directed American History X. We were talking about him on a previous episode because he took an Alan Smithy credit. I did a car commercial that this guy directed for Chevrolet. I couldn't find it online. Don't bother. But if you do, send it to me. when I got to set that day, and sets are like busy, loud places. I got to set and I get to my dressing room and the AD knocks on the door and hands me like a piece of paper that basically says, we're not allowed to talk. Tony wants the set completely quiet. No one talks on set. So we're all communicating with hand signals. I'm going into hair and makeup. What the heck is going on? I get to set and I stand on my mark. It's on this street and there's a car and I'm leaning against the car and I have a monologue to do. That's the commercial. I'm doing a monologue and I'm standing there on my mark waiting 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 45 minutes waiting for something to happen. Then finally, Tony comes to set and he gets onto the dolly, the camera dolly. The DP like gets off. He looks through the view piece down the barrel at me. And I swear to God, he's looking and he's humming and hawing and he says nothing. Keep in mind, no one is saying anything on set. You could hear a pin drop. And then he motions to some PA who comes over with this silver tray of orange slices. And one by one, as he's looking at the frame, he's putting those orange slices in his mouth and chewing on them and finishing them and throwing the peel. And another one goes in and he's looking at me and he's sucking on this orange slice and he throws it away and he gets through the entire orange, guys. And then he says to me, the first words I've heard out of his mouth, say the lines. Okay, we're on. So I say the monologue and then we stop. And then he goes again. And I do it again. And then pretty soon it's just like one after another. I've said the monologue like 25 times in every possible way I can. Say it like your dog just died. All right. Say it like you're screaming from the top of a mountain. And like this was the whole day. And then I did that like 100 times in every conceivable way possible. And he calls cut. He goes, great job. Thanks. Gets up and walks away. And that was my day being directed by Tony Kaye.
Just trying to imagine a totally silent set and one person just slurping away.
Thanks for the memories, Tony. It really is one of my favorite stories.
There are characters in every industry, but in film, these artistic types, and especially ones that, you know, have gotten to a certain level. I hear that Clint Eastwood also demands absolute silence on his set.
Really?
There's a funny Matt, and he only does one take for the most part. And I think Matt Damon was telling a story that when he worked with him, that he did his take, and he was so nervous to be working with him because he was quite a bit younger at that point. And obviously, it's Clint Eastwood, living legend. And he did his take. He thought he desperately wanted another one. And Clint said, "Okay, moving on." And he's like, "Can we do one more?" He's like, "Why you want to keep wasting everyone's time?"
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
Right through the heart. my goodness. Fun business, folks. All right. This one comes from Mike, and I'm just going to say, brace yourself. I love this, Mike. Hey, guys. Hope you're doing well. I'm a 40-year-old guy. Grew up watching the show and rewatched it for the first time in years last year. One night while I was slightly inebriated, I was playing around on Google Gemini and started feeding prompts into it about a Degrassi-related fan fiction. In the end, I've had a story going on for months that I check on every few days. The main characters are Maya, Holly J, Spinner, Lola, who all work at the Dot, which is now owned by Spinner and managed by Holly J, as well as Maya's talking narcissistic cat, Pierogi. I have no idea how I came up with that or the name, but hey, here we are. Anyway, the latest story has all the gang, including the cat, going to Spinner's house since Spinner is making pizza in his new outdoor pizza oven. Pierogi is currently married to Yuppie Doll, to a Yuppie Doll, as in the hockey and baseball mascot. And Spinner's dog, an ancient golden retriever named Cosmo, growled at it since Spinner has trained him well to hate the Habs, being a Leafs fan. Like I said, I was not sober when I came up with this, but hey, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Enjoying the show, both Degrassi and Degrads. Hope you two are doing well.
Well done, Mike.
I need to know how this thing ends. Can you keep sending us this fan fiction that your AI and you are hallucinating? It's great.
Just don't let Cosmo die. Don't have it be like an old Yeller or
like
Rudy
a Marley and Matrix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So for all you fans out there of Degrads Podcast, if you sign up to our Patreon, you guys get early access to ad-free video episodes of the show. And we also respond to all of your questions and comments on there. We've got a nice little thing going on. So check out the Degrads Patreon for that.
And we also obviously have our active Discord community. As Mike was saying before, Mike is on there all the time, just, you know, stirring the shit up. Oh, is that another bleep? Is that another bleep for you, buddy?
Thanks.
And Mike, what's our Discord address?
Degrads Alumni.
That's right. And also we have our mailbag questions. If you want to email us directly at degradspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you once again, as always, from the bottom of our Canadian hearts. We are having a great time. Hopefully you are too. And this has been another episode of the Degrads Podcast with Shane Kippel and Mike Lobel. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.